Mark O'Connor. Mark O'Connor and Maggie O'Connor are playing with the Aberdeen University Civic Symphony this weekend. The program is called American Classics. It features many compositions by Mark O'Connor. He's a world-class fiddler, composer, musician. Yes, those definitions overlap a little bit. Mark O'Connor, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
It's nice to have you in South Dakota. Have you been here before?
Oh, yes. I've performed over the course of my career, probably in every 50, all the 50 states. I remember there was an early fiddle contest in South Dakota I was at as a teenager. So I've been traveling for a while now.
Right. So you mentioned those definitions of a violin and a fiddle sort of overlap. I know you get asked probably every day, but just for some of our listeners who don't know, what's the difference between being a violinist and being a fiddler?
Well, I'm really blurring those boundaries, you know, with my career and my music. I'm bringing in American string playing into my classical compositions. For instance, I'll be performing my improvised violin concerto with the orchestra here, the Civic Symphony Orchestra at Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota, this Saturday night. And that really is a wonderful presentation of bringing in American string playing, fiddling into the classical music setting and blurring those boundaries and bringing the violin and the fiddle monikers, together as one.
Same instrument played differently? Is that...
Well, I would argue that it's played very similarly because, what informs really good string playing is the standard Western classical technique that has been around for hundreds of years. And we've all benefited from that. Matter of fact, I have a whole pedagogy, the O'Connor Method, that brings all these aspects together, classical technique, musical language from our diverse population in American music. So the student enjoys, things from folk songs to African-American spirituals to jazz and bluegrass.
Let's get a little deeper into this idea of American classical music or American string music. A lot of people think of classical music as being European. So let's just talk about that a little bit more as sort of an American string music tradition.
Yeah, I think, obviously there's been some explorations in American classical music via Copland, Gershwin, Bernstein, Ives, and William Grant Still, and a few others that are luminaries in our environment that get played a lot. Matter of fact, the other piece on our program this weekend is an Aaron Copland piece, Buckaroo Holiday. Hmm. But the string part of this equation can be, I think, very profound. It certainly was in Bach's and Mozart's and Beethoven's day. So I feel like that the strings are underutilized in American classical music, and I as a composer and someone with that's contributing kind of new musical ideas to think about, I would love for strings to play a more prominent role in American classical music.
Now, this is something I'm just always trying to get at with musical guests who do composing, songwriting, or writers that come on, artists who create original work, is how do you, when there's so much behind you, so much has already been done, how do you come up with those new musical ideas? How do you start a composition? Where do you use drawing influences from everywhere? Help us kind of figure out that process for you.
I feel that I'm very lucky in that process. I was actually just... we were talking about that. My wife, Maggie, and I, who's a wonderful violinist, and she's performing with me on the concert. And we're just talking about this, thing in the news about Stairway to Heaven and possible plagiarism and all that stuff. And I'm just so lucky that for some reason I'm able to think of, kind of new musical ideas like this improvised violin concerto, for instance. I mean, there's not been anything like it where you would put of the violin soloist on stage to make up the entire line while you kind of score a whole symphony behind it. That's kind of really an original idea
Yeah, how is that possible?
Well, it's definitely a challenge. I mean, it took me a while to get to that in my career, but it definitely puts convention and stands it on its head, because certainly there's a lot of violinists that are graduating Juilliard School right now in New York City that could not play this piece because they would have to have a lot more training in improvisation on the violin, for instance. So it's really a nice message for me of concerning education and musical education, that it should be more inclusive of all the things that we'll need in the 21st century for a musician to be in the profession, whether it's, you know, leading ensembles or writing tunes or songs or full-length compositions. I think that string players should be front and center in that equation, and I certainly represent that ideal, I think.
So how do you develop a young musician or an adult musician into the sense of improv? How do you work on improvisation in a way that, is it a systematic way, or just get out there and do it?
Did you say an adult? An adult student? Well, that's why I designed a whole book, a series of pedagogy, so we can get to the kids with a more complete lesson plan, you know, when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. So by the time they get to an adult, they'll have a working understanding of these materials. I mean, I think that's what's been missing in violin pedagogy for at least a few generations. When we, Maggie and I, performed our duos, for instance, in Hungary this summer at the Leopold Auer Academy, which is this really historic classical music school, you know, that is named after one of the great violin pedagogues of all time, the guy who taught Heifetz, Leopold Auer. Mm-hmm. And most of those Hungarian violin players can improvise. So it's in the culture. That's the cradle of classical music, and I think we've been sort of missing a little bit of the boat here when we ignored our own folk music culture in our own training. And it's so profound. I mean, Antonin Dvorak loved American music, loved African-American spirituals,
right,
and used them in his compositions, and was wondering why more people did not here. And so I think the memo's been there. It's like we're just going to try to capitalize on the fact that this is the time, you know, to really open it up, and string players want to be more part of the creative aspect of making music making, not just the technical.
Is that something they have to be in their life too, or is that just simply what they're going to bring to the practice room? Like, are you teaching them, when you're teaching them about creativity and improv as children, you're doing it through a specific methodology. Does that methodology include anything outside of the actual music? Are they painting? Are they, you know, doing kind of movement? How does that work?
Well, I mean that's, you bring up a wonderful point. I mean, almost every other aspect of a child's life is fairly creative,
mm-hmm.
whether it's riding a bike or building a fort.
Go outside and play.
Right? I mean,
right?
All those things are very creative in a child's life. It's just the violin lesson seems to be the only one that kind of ignores some of this kind of creativity. We want to make the violin lesson creative again. And
yeah.
We want violin, well, out of the same lesson plan, we want player-composers to emerge out of that.
Hmm.
We don't want just only technicians. We want an all-inclusive training, so there's opportunities and choices for children in music.
And that's how you create the next generation of American composers.
I think so. We were sorely lacking in player-composers in violin. I mean, the strength of classical music was founded on the player-composer.
Right.
Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, up through Rachmaninoff and Bartok were all player-composers. It really has just been the last few generations, maybe since World War II, where somehow the separation of the composer and the player came into prominence in academia. And I have a whole college syllabus idea for American string playing that would include, this kind of education in the conservatory. And I'm really anxious to share that with anybody who would listen.
Interesting. Let's go backwards a little bit and talk about some of the fiddlers who influenced you.
Well, my prominent teachers were Benny Thomason, which was one of the greatest old-time fiddlers in American history, and then Stefan Grappelli, who's probably one of the greatest jazz violinist players in history, And both of them combined for my mentors and teachers in my teenage years, and I got to play with them, shared musical lessons with them, but also the music stage. And that's a big part of learning American music and learning to be creative as a musician is performing and jamming and working up new music with everybody in your community, including your teachers.
And you were pretty successful as a child, or certainly as a teenager. Did you have the confidence then to do, or that increase as you got older?
I guess I had a lot of confidence. I mean, I was a recording artist at age 12, so that gave me a little bit of boost there. I was the youngest ever to sign a record deal with Rounder Records. Oddly enough, 40-some years later, I'm back with Rounder, my O'Connor band, consisting of my family members, has just signed another major record deal with Concord Music Group and Rounder Records. And our record will be released this summer, and it features a bunch of my family members. It's so exciting to be able to come full circle from those days when I was a kid.
Now, I asked you at the beginning of our conversation if you'd been to Sioux Falls, but I actually knew the answer, because everyone that I've talked to, I said, I'm interviewing Mark O'Connor from Sioux Falls. They said, or I asked if you've been to South Dakota, but from Sioux Falls, you know where I'm going here already,
yeah.
Augustana. They all said, ask him about the broken violin.
Oh, my goodness.
So there was a residency at Augustana before the performance, I understand. The violin was broken somehow.
Well, it was actually, I broke my violin about 10 minutes before I was to go on stage with the orchestra, playing the improvised violin concerto, matter of fact. So this is the second performance in South Dakota of this piece.
Wow.
And this was about 2 years ago, and I had my violin on the counter, and somebody entered my dressing room door and made kind of shocked me. I turned around, and whatever I was doing caught the violin and pulled it down to the ground before I could react. And it split all the way open, and I was so profoundly sad and shocked by the whole thing that I caused its seemingly demise. And I had to borrow the concertmaster's violin. It's the classic story, right, where
right.
I didn't have a second violin with me. I had to borrow the concertmaster's. They actually brought a few down, but the concertmaster's was the best. So he borrowed another violin from the back of the section, and I really did improvise that night. I got it all glued back up. I play the same violin, and it's unbelievably, it's even better than before. So somehow this there was angels hovering over this incident in the end.
Tell me about that instrument that you play, because it was one of your favorite violins.
It was, and it is. It's not an old chestnut, so it's a modern-made violin, but it's handmade, handcrafted by Jonathan Cooper in Maine, and he's the one that repaired it, so he took a lot of loving care with it. And he told me, he said, you know, you might be surprised, but you could get this better, you could get this back, and it might be better for you. And I think it did. Taking the top off and replaced in the bass bar allowed the violin to breathe. It's only 20 years old, and it's a wonderful sounding instrument, but it could even be a little bit better now that that happened. Oddly, I mean, I would not recommend it to anybody.
Let's let the instrument breathe for a minute by knocking it off a counter. No, that's not what we're going to say. How on earth did you emotionally go on after watching that sort of happen before your eyes? And
well,
then you had to go on stage.
It was hard. You know, you learn how to compartmentalize as a functioning human being at some point. And so what I did, I couldn't bear to look at it, and I couldn't bear to show anybody. Everybody wanted to see it before I played. People were coming into my dressing room. So what I did was I put it back in its case, and I put it lovingly back in its case, all in shatters, and I put my cloth on top of it just like usual, and I put the case down, I locked it, and I sat it there, and I didn't show anybody. But I couldn't bear to share this with any more people than all the couple people that have seen it already. So that helped me, because it made me move on to the performance, and I had a task at hand here and an audience waiting and musicians well rehearsed, and I had to get on with it.
And that story is just, I mean, legendary already in our state because of going on afterwards. So, yeah. Tell me about working with your wife. Tell me about Maggie.
Well, we have a new recording out called Duo, and it features all our violin duos that we put in the Book 4 and Book 5, The O'Connor Method. The Book 5 is actually coming out in a couple of months. That's the most advanced level for learning American styles and American strings. And Maggie is just such a wonderful violinist. She can play all these styles. She kind of grew up a little bit like me in that there was classical music training, but there was also ensemble playing and bluegrass and blues and popular music styles as well, and as improv and things. So we're really, really equally matched for this material and to perform together. And we've been performing all over the place, and it's just so much fun. And of course, she's in the O'Connor Band too, so we're expanding it to include more family members. It's really been beautiful. It's like people, when they see us play together, it one student here described it as, when they play together, it makes me happy. So we think that happens a lot.
That's a perfect note to end it on. Mark O'Connor, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to performing here at the Symphony with the Civic Center in Aberdeen, and the music is just sounding terrific and exciting. Really excited to play this improv concerto again. And with Maggie, we're going to play Strings and Threads Suite together, mm-hmm. a piece that we've been playing all over the place as well. So some of our best music on stage to share with Aaron Copeland.
The concert's April 16th at 7:30 p.m. It's at the Aberdeen Civic Theater.